Well, I thought we'd go into something a little bit retro because we are now going to have a chat with good friend and known identity, Denny McKenzie. Good morning, Denny.
Good morning, Margaret. Chilly, so, isn't it?
Oh, we're just commiserating with each other about the cold. But, Denny, look, thank you so much for coming into the studio. I'm pretty excited because I didn't give your extra letters OAM, but anyway,
that's all right.
That was last year's big thrill. But I've just had this amazing time. I had to, as I said, I had to declare a royal holiday because you gave me this book to read before the interview, and I couldn't put it down. It was amazing. It's called Who the Hell is Phyllis?
Yes. Well. Do you want to know how the title came about?
Yeah, I do. Who the hell, I mean, how did it come about?
Yes. Well, the title came about because in 1961 I was in England and my father had said before I left Australia, oh, here's the name of an old mate, look him up. Well, I didn't think my father had any old mates, but never mind.
Yeah.
So I wrote him.
Your father was a stern Navy man, wasn't he?
He was one of the first entry boys.
Right.
So 1913.
Yeah. So he had that sort of services fierceness about him, or forcefulness, well, I suppose. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I think he was probably actually a bit of a wimp, but I don't know. He certainly knew how to belt you.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I wrote to this guy and he wrote back and he said, oh, dear, and he... you must be Phyllis's daughter. Well, I mean, the shock that went through me was just unbelievable.
Because you were not Phyllis's daughter.
I'd never heard of a Phyllis.
Ah.
So I'm saying, who the hell is Phyllis in this
Phyllis?
To my parents.
Yeah.
And I could see them sitting there wringing their hands saying, oh, my God, we've now got to tell her something, we tell her?
Something out of the closet.
So they sent back this extraordinary story and I thought, oh, yeah, right. I'll ask them again when I'm home.
Mm. So you're gadding about England
at
the time.
Yeah, I was there for a year and then I came back and I said, okay, so who the hell was Phyllis?
Right.
Oh, said my mother. Well, you see, what happened was that the doctor of the Naval College invited your father for dinner. And at the dinner, he announced the engagement of his daughter, Phyllis, to your father. And your father didn't know anything about it. But being the gentleman he was, he went ahead and married her. Then when he got ill, she realised he'd never become an admiral and she left him.
Oh.
And I just went, yeah, right. Rolled my eyes.
This was a stunning
1962, this
a
was.
A stunning revelation, though, I imagine.
Well, yes and no. I was cross because I'd been at boarding school and every third girl came from a separated family because sort of that's what you did when you were separating in those
Back
days.
Back in those days, yeah.
Yeah, you sent your kids off to boarding school to stop the, nonsense. Anyway, so she could have saved me 5 years of worry because I'd said to her at one stage, will you ever divorce Dad? I will never divorce your father, she said. So anyway, I thought this story was still cock and bull, so I took no notice of it and went on with my rather extraordinarily curly life until about 2000, I got a phone call from a guy called Peter Jones.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Peter Jones was writing a story on the first entry boys of the Navy and he asked me if I had any photos and bits
now,
and pieces.
I'm going to slow you down here for a moment, Denny, because the Navy is another character, another star in this book. And,
yeah, it
and
is.
Australia at the turn of the century, of the last century, the early 1900s, of course, we just had a new Australia.
Yeah.
But we didn't have a Navy.
No. Well, actually, every state did have a navy, but it was just a sort of state thing. It wasn't like the Royal Navy. It was just state boats.
Mm.
And so then this Admiral Creswell, well, I mean, he wasn't Admiral then, but he decided that Australia should have its own navy.
Yeah. And it was a big thing, wasn't it?
Oh,
I mean, there was...
Huge.
And this is what I just loved about the book, that there's this freshness in it of this new country, Australia, having its new navy.
Yeah.
Oh.
Well, there was a limit. So there was 28 boys and
who were going into this first class.
Into the first cohort. And so there was an allocation for each state depending on your population. So Western Australia got two, Tasmania got two, South Australia got one, Queensland got one, and New South Wales and Victoria made up the rest to make it 28.
Mm-hmm.
And the two people in Western Australia, one was my father and the other was this James Estelle. Now, I went to the 100-year anniversary at Jervis Bay and this girl walked past with Estelle on her badge.
Right.
And I looked at her and I said, oh, that's funny. I was at school with an Estelle. And she shrugged her shoulders and walked on and I thought no more about it. And she came back and she said, oh, they are my aunts.
Right.
And the only two people from Western Australia had their daughters at the same boarding school. Well, they weren't boarders. They were day girls.
Right.
Because by this time their father was a farmer. And we didn't know. Mm. We had no idea.
Mm.
So, I mean, the world is such an extraordinary place, really.
Mm.
So, anyway, what happened next? Oh, yeah, the 2000, the centenary. And then this Peter Jones had rung. And then...
Now, you didn't know who Peter Jones was.
I didn't know who
Peter Jones was. He wasn't just any Peter Jones, was he?
He wasn't. No, I found out he was a vice admiral. Thank the Lord he didn't tell me in the first place because I'm sure I would have fainted.
Mm, but you just thought he was any old Peter Jones.
Well, you know.
And he'd written you a letter about...
well, he rang, I think, the first time.
Yeah.
And just said, have you got anything? And because I've got a rotten brother who'd whipped in and taken most of everything else, I said, oh, I haven't got much. And then I was rung up by David Jones and I said, oh, is your nickname Locker?
Yeah.
He didn't get the joke at all.
As in Davy Jones Locker?
Davy Jones Locker, Anyway, so that was fine. And so invited to the centennial. And then Peter, by this time, the next couple of months later, he had finished the book and it was published, and so we all went down to the launch.
So this was a book about...
The first entry.
Right.
700 pages.
Book about the first entry in the first bit of the foundation of the Royal Australian Navy.
Exactly.
And they had a school.
That's right. They started in Geelong at a place called Osborne House, which was a, you know, lovely old home of one established family. And then after Jervis Bay was built, and it took a long time because they had to raise a lot of money.
So and Jervis Bay was the site that was chosen.
Yeah, because Creswell wanted somewhere where the boys could have fresh air. I think also he might have thought, well, we don't want teenagers in a city, teenage boys in a city.
Too much to look after.
So it was very, very isolated. And when it opened in 1915, the single officers' quarters had yet to be finished.
Right.
So hence you got single officers being billeted with married officers.
Yeah.
And hence, and of course the doctor of the college was not the doctor of the college, he was a PhD.
Right.
So he was the top educational, where he was trying to get to be headmaster.
Well, these boys were recruited, these boys which included, of course, your dad from Western Australia, they were recruited to be part of the Navy at a very young age, really.
13. And so, by 17, they're in a war, in Scarpa Flow.
Mm.
You know, imagine, we're talking about coal today. Blimey, imagine what it was like up there.
Yeah.
And so that... that was a fascinating thing. I mean, I think he may have got shell shock from there.
But hang on a minute, we're jumping ahead, but that's good. So this is the story of this first intake of naval boys. I mean, this is part of the story.
Yeah.
But they're teenagers and they need to be educated and they need to be, and you describe, you know, the book is just fascinating from an historical point of view because you describe the particular kind of education they got as members of the Navy. From the age of 13, they were naval men.
Well, that's right. Mm. And Creswell, Creswell said he didn't want the boys to be disciplined in the same harsh way that the English boys were.
Okay.
Because, you know, that fagging system, etc.
Yeah.
But it was pretty close to it.
Yeah.
And the word around the traps was that the Australian boys were to be moulded in such a way that when they mixed with the English boys, you would not be able to tell the difference.
Ah, interesting.
So, you know, coming from Victoria, you know, you've got the accent there before you even start.
Yeah.
And so they just slipped in. And in fact, they thought that they were sent to a particular island, Whale Island, and were supposed to be a, you know, really difficult training part. And you know, Tally said, well, it really wasn't that bad. It wasn't as bad at home, actually.
Mm,
you know,
mm.
So.
But the intake was in 1915, but
yeah.
As you say, by the time these boys, in a few years' time, they're in the middle of World War One.
Yeah.
And yeah. Doing some pretty shocking.
And that's the thing, in 1914,
yeah.
Was when Frederick, the doctor of the college, in other words, the headmaster, cracked the code, the German code.
And this is all true.
This is all true.
Yeah.
And James Phelps wrote about it. Well, he didn't do his research very well, but never mind. Frederick was a mathematical whiz and German ancestry on his mother's side. That created a few problems too with some people in the college.
So the texture of the novel, I'm just going to throw a few comments in because as a reader that knew nothing about this history, I didn't grow up with this kind of family history. But the history of, you know, the European origin of many people that were, you know, fiercely Australian, but they nevertheless often would speak another language. Australia's still the same, I suppose. But for example, in this family, German was, you know, the lingua franca of part of the family.
It was from Frederick's mother's part, and the head of the college was a chap called Captain Morgan, and. Connie was his wife. Now, Connie Constance was in fact German. Her father was some highfalutin character. I can't remember who now.
And so the kind of the social kind of flavour of the time, you know, referred back to Europe a lot.
Oh yeah. Well, you know, you went home, didn't you? When you went to England, you went home. Which is quite a scream.
Yeah.
And also the other thing is that when my grandmother first landed in England, they said, oh, you do speak English rather well. And they said exactly the same thing to me. And there's a bit in my next book about that, which is very funny, very funny.
Yeah.
But no, I think it was very hard work. They kept the boys pretty busy. And rightly so, you know, they're going through puberty and, oh, they had school dances, don't get me wrong. And I mean, Frensham and Skeggs, girls, Sydney girls, were bussed down. I mean, what would you do for a beau? My God, 4 hours bus trip.
It was pretty safe, wasn't it? It's tucked away there in Jarvis Bay. With all that bushland between them and the girls.
A picture of my father sitting on a horse, and it took me until I wrote this book to realise that, you know, there were, Peter Jones's book actually, that one of the officers had horses. And Prince Edward came. He stayed for 2 days. The first day it was all, you know, official. And the second day he went riding. So, I mean, you know, hard work. He also went to Neggs,
and that
which
appears,
came into that book.
And so Armidale appears. This is I don't know what to call it because it's a rollicking yarn at one level, but there's a very serious side of it, which is very to me resonant of Ruth Park. You know, but you know, Crown Swords and Rings of really classic Australian writer, but with your lightness of touch, Denny, beautiful sense of humour. And I think we can't really miss talking about Ginny, one of your main characters.
Oh, Ginny. Ginny. Well, Ginny, I can't really how. Yes, I know how. Because what happened was that I was riding away and there was so much information, and then I had 144,000 words, and I'm thinking, this has got to be two books. And then I thought, oh, God, all right, well, okay. Who the hell is Phyllis's one? The second one is, I am Phyllis. Okay, that's fine. Well, look, I'll just start with I am Phyllis and pull all the stuff from who the hell is Phyllis into first person, and just adored writing as the characters because I could so really get underneath them, you know, and feel
so,
out.
So it's a bit of a it's a mystery story. Who the hell is Phyllis?
Yeah,
Phyllis is somebody in your family, sort of, but she's not your mum.
No,
but she had she is the character that is, and it's the life of Phyllis and the tragedy that is the main character in this book. But woven around it as just an amazing picture of life in Australia and right around Australia, mainly the Eastern Seaboard, but traipsing mainly between Jervis Bay and Armidale in a sense, but Melbourne and Sydney. Mm. But in that really interesting time covering the two world wars and then...
Yeah.
And then after World War II as well.
That's right. Well, you see, the thing after the book launch... Peter Jones emailed me from England.
The book launch of his book.
His book.
Yeah.
And he said, oh, Denny, by the way, I've just found your father's first wife's second child by her second marriage. I think you'll get on. I'm going...
So this is new... sort of family members are emerging.
Well, she's no actual blood relation, you see.
No.
So, and she's got this Mornay Bibby written in. So I responded to her immediately and said, look, if you ever come to Australia, come and see me. So she wrote back immediately and said, I'm coming in 2 months' time.
Right.
I'm visiting my son who lives in Australia. So she came in. And, you know, we were chatting away and I'd made up my mind that I was not going to tell her my side of the story till I heard hers.
Mm.
And then she said something like, I said, well, you know, tell me your side, Mornay. And she said, well, when Vivian died, and I went, what? She said, yes, it was Phyllis's older sister. When she committed suicide, I said, what? Well, you know, the big bad wolf, Phyllis vanished and my heart was bleeding for her.
For
this little 12-year-old girl who's lost a nearly 17-year-old beloved sister, you know, her only, you know, because the parents were so cold and interested in their own things.
Mm.
And, you know, she'd lost her comfort blanket basically. And, you know, everybody wants to be loved and... to find the path to love is very difficult.
And that's really what this
book is. And that's what this book is all about. Yeah.
Don't want to give too much away, but it is just at the... Mm. But it's based in, as you say, when you found...
Well, where I found it,
daughters,
the first thing I found before... after I'd met Mornay twice, and I said, you know, I think there's a book in this, and I thought... It was going to be a family history book, you know, just an ordinary family history book, you know, bog boring. Anyway, we were going through Trove and Alan goes, oh, look at this. And there is an article in Kiavari, which is Askham's magazine, and Kiavari means mockery in Latin, and welcoming, first of all, giving the memoriam to Vivian and underneath it welcoming the new girls to the next term at Askham and there was Phyllis's name. And I'm thinking, what? You mean to tell me that, the first daughter dies and less than 2 months later they send their next daughter, there's a son in between, he's in the Navy, to the same school. I mean, Where were their heads and hearts?
And you see, by this time you're a mum of three girls, and you've got a big heart for children. You understand what it's like to bring up teenagers, and suddenly the story comes alive, doesn't it? The
emotional side. Well, I just felt so sad for her because, you know, it didn't matter what she did, almost, you know, it was sort of the wrong path. I mean, at one stage she thought she was on her path at Weebung Weebung, which was a friend's property, which means magpies in that particular Aboriginal thing. And that was the other thing in the book, that I had to give Phyllis her period on her wedding night because she didn't have any children from Tally, so I had to make sure why she couldn't have any children on the wedding night.
Yeah.
And so what's he doing, you know? And so I gave him a book. So I'm thinking, oh, what book will I give him? So I went to my bookshelf and there was my great-grandfather's book. He was Recollections of a Police Officer. He was actually quite high up, but he was also at the siege of Ned Kelly and therefore...
At Glenrowan.
Yeah, at Glenrowan. So he was head of that capture. And his story too is fascinating. So anyway, the book fell open at, you know, the siege.
Mm.
And I said to my cousin, I can't believe this. And he said, Denny, that happens all the time. If you're on the right track...
Yep.
Things drop into your lap.
Denny, we're going to take a short break and come back to you. I'm just going to play one track. We'll come straight back. There we go. Fly Me to the Moon. That was a pretty slow version, but Denny, nothing slow about your book. Denny, it's been a long journey, hasn't it? I mean,
Five years.
I picked the book up and it was just a fantastic read. And so interesting because it covers that period that isn't written about a lot. I think, you know, the last century, the sort of modernisation of Australia from, you know, 1915 right through to the present almost.
Mm.
But how did you do it? And I imagine that we've got a lot of listeners out there who've got great family stories and mysteries. I mean, it's a bit of a whodunit as well.
Well, it is. It is.
There is a
mystery.
Death.
It's a mystery.
And it start, you know, and a warning to listeners, it starts off with a pretty grisly kind of, well, like any good Agatha Christie, there's a body.
Yes, that's right, there's a body.
Mm. But it's a tragedy as well, which
it
marks
is.
A lot of
it
the
is.
Other lives. But it's set in this amazing period of Australia's own development. And
well, that's right. And I think that what writers of today who might be in their 80s like me and have got a story to tell should actually do it, because otherwise we'll lose that information. And that book of mine is based on true stories.
Mm.
Obviously, you have to weave them.
Mm.
And then things start dropping into your lap. Like at one stage, I couldn't find where Phyllis was enrolled except at Ascombe. But Ascombe fortunately had that she'd left in the October of 1919, that she'd gone to Neggs, and that they'd also somehow down the track found out she'd gone to Women's College at Sydney University.
Mm.
I had the Bodleian Library even involved in this research.
Mm, that's in London.
In Oxford.
Oxford, yeah, sorry.
The Bodleian and the Archival Library, the archivist in Lincoln College in Oxford was also the archivist for the Magdalene College School of Boys, which is where Frederick's son went.
Mm.
Frederick was a code breaker. You know, I mean, there's... really, the people are just... in one sense, what I call ordinary people, except that they believed and were intending to be the most upper-class people you could possibly be.
Yeah,
and, of course, having an alcoholic daughter didn't help, did it?
That's another thing, I think, that just straight after reading your book, I read something about a European family during World War – well, in a similar period during the lead-up to World War II and during World War II, and that was based in the Netherlands, Holland. And what I found amazing was such a difference. I mean, the Europeans were so used to their place in society nothing really changed generation to generation. But there was this real sense that you've so well conveyed in that sort of Ruth Park sort of style, I guess, of fluidity, social pretension almost.
Yeah, yeah.
People were in this big, spacious country, and they were really going for it in terms
of good example of social mobility. My mother's words were, "We don't say frock, we say dress." You know, we don't say perfume, we say scent.
Mm.
You know, there are all these words that you weren't allowed to use because otherwise they were lower class words.
Mm.
You know, and we weren't lower class. Oh, genteel poverty was another one. You could be as poor as a church mouse, but providing that, you know.
You knew the right words to say.
You had the right lineage.
Yeah.
You were okay.
Mm.
It was very class conscious in those days. And even in the 50s.
Oh, no, look, I remember being terribly scolded as a child to the point of tears because I cut a scone, a fresh scone out of the oven instead of breaking it open.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Now, I don't know where that came from.
Well, it comes from bread. Mm. That when you had bread on the side of your dinner plate, you never cut it, you broke it.
Right. Mm.
And actually, it's a bit biblical, isn't it?
I mean, all I remember is sitting on the back steps crying my eyes out because I was humiliated by being scolded in front of visitors because I'd cut a scone instead of breaking it and things like that. And then, you know, inculcated with the right way to say, you know, few and less.
Yeah.
And all of those.
Oh, amount and number. That's a good one. But I didn't get that from my parents. I got it from uni.
And I mean, to a certain extent, there's fun in that grammatical side of it. But this amazing sort of, I would call it kind of like skedaddling from one level of society. They say Australia's not a class conscious society, but your book absolutely puts the light of that. Mm. Yeah.
Well, that was the other thing too with the boys that were in the first entry.
Mm.
They came from all degrees of class.
Mm.
So, but you had to pass this very rigid exam.
Mm.
It was really, you know, tough. You had to be top exam.
Mm.
And then my father said, but Peter Jones says it wasn't true, but my father was there, so I think it was.
Mm.
He said, and then we had to pour tea for the officers, and if we couldn't do that, we weren't in.
Mm. Mm.
So if you didn't know how to do it, in other words, your manners weren't good enough.
Mm. And you hadn't been, this whole thing of, you know, do you put the milk in first and all those sorts of things, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, you can laugh about that, but they were serious. They were serious determinants of where you sat socially.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Mm.
I had an English grandmother, so. And, you know, so and I had a first fleeters on the other side, so there was always this tension between, you know, my father who came from this sort of really deep colonial, well, convict origins, really, you know, he really didn't care that much, you know, but he was ambitious, but he didn't care about these niceties, and on the other side, but he'd married my mother, who really did, because they spoke of class or something.
Oh, yeah. God, yes.
But it's all there in the book, yeah. It's just a wonderful social history.
Oh, thank you.
Now, and look, and it's a true story. And this is almost...
Well, it's a true story, but, you know, like all novels, not every part is actually true.
In fact, we're talking about almost a new genre here, aren't we, Denny?
Well, yes. I mean, I've heard so many people talk about faction instead of fiction and non. Well, this is called an historical novel. Well, novel to me means you make the whole thing up.
Mm.
I have not made the whole thing up. But, in fact, to begin with, I thought I was just doing a family history between the two of us, to be quite honest, until I found stuff in the archives and sent them off to Mornay, and she said, I have never seen my mother's handwriting ever.
Mm.
And then with Vivian's death, well, you know, did she actually pull the trigger? You know, so, you know, I'm ringing up morgues and, you know, funeral directors, and the research, every single word had to be researched because there were words in that weren't used, or there were words we use today that weren't used then.
Now, Denny, I'm sure you won't mind me saying that this is published under your family name.
Yes, it is. It's published under my maiden name of DM, sadly. The M is for Mornay. Duplicator.
Oh, that's beautiful. And it's a sort of pen name, but it actually is your family name from. Yep. And of course, you go right back to the police. One of your previous books was about the Ned Kelly, the chase for Ned Kelly and the siege there. But look, this is a the book is going to be launched on the 8th of August.
Yes, at Boo Books.
And everybody's invited?
Oh, yes. There'll be champers and cheese and a lot of fun, I think.
I think it's going to be very fun. And if I haven't said it before, there's so much humour in this book. It's not a heavy read. It's a it's a fun read, but it's not a comedy. It's actually a very light touch on...
Well, I think because I love... well, as we were talking the other day about potable... You know, I love words that have got two meanings, and I love play on words. That's basically what I like. And I don't like talking about sex, for instance, because I think everybody actually knows how to do it. I don't think you have to explain it.
You know.
And if it gets to that stage in a book like Diana Gabaldon's, you know, she's writing beautifully, and then she starts to describe a sex scene. I go, "Sorry, lady, you've lost me now."
Yeah. So those things are left to your imagination, of course.
Yes.
But anyway, so look, if people are interested and they're all invited, 6 o'clock, is it?
6 o'clock.
6 o'clock at Boo Books.
At Boo Books.
Which is in the mall. And there'll be, as you say, champers and a bit of fun. And, of course, there'll be author signing and you'll be talking a bit about the book then as well.
I will.
Oh, thank you so much for coming in, Denny.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
Oh, well, look, Armidale's an amazing place, and one of your other books is
Jewels of New England. Yeah, well, that needs a volume too because all these new ones are coming up.
Yeah,
I'll be 84 next week.
You don't look it, and you certainly don't sound it, and you're going like stink. Absolutely.
Well, I think I'm 88, aren't I?
You've got another book on the go, so you know, we're looking forward to talking to you about that one in due course.
I was really stuck last night, and this morning it's dropped into my lap.
Yeah.
So there you go. I know I'm on the right track.
It's amazing, isn't it? And as you say, this started off as a kind of fairly...
Family history,
and now it's the multiple voices of many people observers to this extraordinary time in our history.
That was such fun writing the first person.
Yeah, well, the fun really comes through.
Thank you so much.
We'll see you on the 8th.
Yeah, look forward to it.
Thank you so much,
Denny. Bye now.
Bye.